This is North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. Bill Newell talking with the Salem News reporters, sports writers, as we speak, getting ready for tomorrow's post with the Salem News sports writers. And I imagine, just guessing here, Tim, that the Super Bowls might be the topic of conversation tomorrow with the sports writers.
I would imagine so. You know, we've got Salem, St. John's Prep, and Amesbury as the local contingents representing the North Shore, and we'll see how it goes during the week.
It's a strange setup this year. We've gone down to Gillette many, many times, even before this present system. We went down there in the old Sullivan Stadium or Foxborough Bowl, whatever the heck it was called. We've been doing this for a long time. But this is a completely new setup with the games taking place during the week. And I know that you and Bill are planning to take road trips Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday.
I'm scheduled to sub for a couple of days at the end of the week, but I'll make a decision there. Thursday looks like maybe the best bet for me to go, as I really would like to see Salem perform. St. John's Prep and Amesbury a little bit more farther away from me, so... but we'll see. And also, I'm dealing with the gas company is installing new mains and new meters, and I'm waiting for them to inform me of just when they're going to be coming into my house to do it.
Well, Amesbury lost to Newburyport on Thanksgiving. They're playing Uxbridge on December 1st. That's Friday at 3 p.m. In Gillette. That's Division 7. And then on Thursday, it's Salem. They're playing on Thursday. I'm going backwards here, as they will be playing the Division 6 Super Bowl at 3 o'clock at Gillette. And they're playing Fairhaven at 10-1, Salem 9-2. And, of course, the game for bragging rights all over everywhere is St. John's Prep versus Xaverian. And Xaverian beat the Prep on Thanksgiving Day by a point or 2 points, I think it was. And so that's going to be a very interesting game. Bill will be on that one. It's going to be a really late night for the kids and for Bill, as that's an 8 o'clock start on Wednesday. So Wednesday it's the Prep, Thursday it's Salem, and Friday it's Amesbury. And Bill and Tim, insofar as Tim can make it, will be covering all three of these games with updates and with post-game interviews and videos. Tim, I haven't been able to find anywhere if these games are going to be televised. I know usually they're on Channel 38. Have you come across anything?
I have not. I have not seen or heard anything relative to television coverage, which, again, usually is pretty well advertised and known, so people know. Usually it's on Channel 5 covers them. So, I don't know, we're going to have to see.
Yeah, I can't find anything, and I've been looking, all kinds of places on the Internet, the MIAA website itself. I'm going to take one more look here as we discuss this, because we've had some fun down there, Tim, over the years. It's a different format now, and I'm guessing there's probably not going to be the usual breakfast and stuff like that. Again, have you heard any itinerary from down there?
No, I have not. Generally, you know, when we've gone... when I've gone to the media day for the coaches for the coin tosses by the team's captain, they usually inform us of, again, where you're going to be situated in terms of your broadcasting and what the schedule is, because Mr. Kraft very kindly in the past years has always provided breakfast, lunch, and dinner. On that Saturday of when all the games were played at Gillette, that, however, not being the case in terms of time frame, there may just be an evening meal, maybe a lunch and a supper. Kind of hard to figure out, but have not seen anything. And again, you're right, there's been a lot of information missing on the MIAA website.
Yeah, and there's nothing, I'm on the website now, and... very sparse. It doesn't say anything about live streaming or anything like that, or even on the local television. So, you know, soon, and Bill probably will know more, probably know more tomorrow when he, as he talks with these Salem News writers. I'm sure they'll come up with stuff. So we'll have it on our website. Whatever information is out there, we will get. I can promise you that. Bill is all over that. And I do also want to mention some really great stuff that's on the website right now. Dominic Nicastro has been working overtime right now with the sports desk. He's been at Super Sub in Beverly, and he's done a series of interviews that we're dropping here on MSO with the Beverly boys, excuse me, the Beverly Fall captains, both boys and girls. Tremendous interviews, and right from Super Sub, and it's all video. You have got to check them out. We've got one posted already, and several more are scheduled for tomorrow and the next day. So that's all upcoming. Bill Newell also will have a podcast with Salem High School football coach Matt Bouchard, as the Witches will be meeting Fairhaven in the 6th Super Bowl on Thursday at 3 p.m., and that post will probably be dropped tomorrow as well. I'll be talking with Colin McQueen, the Amesbury High School football coach, tomorrow, and we'll have that posted later in the week as they play a little bit later. They play on Friday. So, and we also have Brian St. Pierre. He's up there right now as Bill talked with Coach St. Pierre of St. John's Prep this morning. So you want to avail yourself to our sports information here at MSO News Sports, along with the sports news, too. So, Tim, before we bring in Steve Krause and talk a little bit about professional sports drafting, I almost said betting, how'd Thanksgiving go with you and your family?
Oh, it was very, very well. You know, the usual, it's my wife and her brother and sister and her brother's spouse. We get together and we do a rotation between the three of us. We rotate the two holidays. So every third year, you don't have to cook a holiday meal. But this is our year for Thanksgiving. Next year, we'll have Christmas, and then we'll have the year off. And it's worked well for us for a long time. And we all enjoy each other's company very much, and it always lasts long before lunch, or long before dinner, and well after dinner. Yeah.
That's nice. That sounds a great way to do it. My daughter and her husband held Thanksgiving for the first time at their place in Rockport, and she had her husband's parents and grandparents were there, and her older sister and husband and our grandchildren were there. We were there. The only thing, I don't mind not doing dishes. I mean, I don't mind doing dishes, but I don't mind not doing them too. But it was weird when we don't, you know, Bill and I have been doing this for 40 years, and when we don't go to a game on Thanksgiving morning, it's just, I don't know what to do. And also, we didn't get any leftovers, so I had no turkey sandwiches to look forward to.
Yeah, you know, I was talking to a friend on Friday, and it suddenly dawned on me, I said, hey, we didn't have stuffing yesterday. Oh. My wife had made a broccoli casserole instead. Mm-hmm. And I went, hey, how come no stuffing?
I know, it's strange, isn't it, the things that that you get used to, I guess. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back with Mike Grenier. If the gremlins don't mess up my board here and I don't see any Foo Fighters out there, we'll bring in Mike. We'll bring in Steve Krause first, so I've already started it. Steve Krause will be along. Steve, of course, sports writer, sports editor, news writer, news editor, primarily at the Daily Item in Lynn. And I'm going to talk some sports drafting. He's got a tremendous article up on Facebook that he wrote today about it. Very insightful, very thoughtful. And we're going to talk about that stuff. And basically the topic is, what's the worst one? What's the worst draft? I've got one. I'm going to save it for later. Just one. It's the only one I could think of. But we'll be right back. This is North Shore Sports Night on MSONewsSports.com. I'm Rick Moll with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer Bill Proposky, and Bill Newell, of course, working away as well.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
The North Shore is listening to MSONewsSports.com. and our great selection of podcasts.
Hi, this is Phil Stacy, executive sports writer at the Salem News. Make sure to listen to our podcast every week with the sports writers from the Salem News, including Matt Williams, Nick Giannino, and myself.
MSO News Sports, connecting you to the North Shore. MSONewsSports.com is connecting you to the North Shore. A real local news and sports podcast giving you updates from around Essex County. Spotlight feature interviews with area newsmakers. The North Shore Today Post features community updates and local photos and useful links. This is the place to hear and see positive local coverage, making the connections that support the North Shore community.
We're back now with Steve Krause, sports editor, sports writer, news editor, news writer, and all-around journalist and good guy. Steve, welcome. How are you? Did you have a good Thanksgiving, I hope?
Well, it was all right, except the wrong team won my game, but otherwise it was okay.
Which game was that?
Preps-Avarians.
Oh, God, yes, yes. Oh, my, what a classic. Jeez.
It was a crazy game, but I guess Zavarian's better at winning crazy games.
Well, you know, we'll find out on, what is it, Wednesday night?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll find out. You know that. Okay, we've been talking, we've avoided the local Gillette professional football team down there, and we were talking primarily about the setup of the Super Bowls and how amazing it's been. I really have enjoyed the Saturday Super Bowls over the years, because I know there was one time, I think all of us were down there for three or four games at once, if I recall. We had three or four.
That was the year it snowed.
Yep. And I remember it was fun up in that big room there, you know, between games and having something to eat. That was, and we were there like 8 or 10 hours, weren't we, Tim? We were there all day.
Oh yeah, we were there for the first game. We were there for the last game.
Yeah.
I just remember 10 hours of Mr. Matthew Roy. And snow and driving home. And
yeah.
It wasn't the best time I've ever had, but it was okay. It was okay.
Fine. All right. Well, I have fond memories. I forgot about the, you know, the pain in the neck stuff that happens. And I do want to say once again, every single time we went down there under the Kraft administration, we went down there before that under other guys, even other stadiums that were down there. But every single time that we've gone down to cover high school Super Bowls at Gillette, the staff has been nothing except incredibly exceptional. And I'm talking about from the parking lot attendants to the servers who serve food to the elevator operator and everybody else. You've experienced that too, haven't you?
Yeah, they treat you the same way they treat the reporters that cover the pro games. And, you know, anything you need, they have. You know, you don't have to go looking all over the place to find things. The directions that they give you on where to go and how to get there are very explicit and on the money. I just think that that's probably a craft quality, you know. If you're going to do something, do it right. Mm-hmm. You know, don't do it halfway. And they have never done anything halfway down there, but when it comes to us.
The last thing Steve and Rick, that Mr. Kraft wants to hear is a complaint about one of the staff not being cordial, not being helpful.
You know? No, I would agree with that. I think he probably puts a high priority on keeping the customer satisfied, whoever the customer may be. You know, they got to know me eventually because I was down there all the time. But I'm not Dan Shaughnessy or Ben Volen, you know. The red sheet doesn't part the minute I walk in the door.
Well, you're just a little shorter than those guys.
Like it does.
Okay. All right, Steve, open it up now. You and Tim go at it with this drafting thing.
Oh, my goodness gracious. And with and I know we don't want to talk about yesterday. I mean, I'm all for not talking about yesterday. But I want to say that I thought about this all day because, and I even wrote something about it.
Yeah, I read that. Yep, I read it.
Who are the worst draft choices in history? You know, there are a lot. You know, it's not just around here either. I think that the prize for national pretty much has to go with Jamarcus Russell when first round draft choice for the Raiders, who was just horrible. He never met a food buffet he didn't like, and he was all out of it.
Steve.
Huh?
I have one for you when you're done.
All right. Oh, what's yours? Because we might have the same one, but go ahead.
Former number one draft choice of the Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
Defensive lineman, University of Texas.
Mm-hmm.
I know exactly who you're going to say.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And Ken Sims absolutely was a complete bust from the time he put on a Patriots helmet.
Game day. Ken Game Day Sims. You know, he was awful. He was, you know, and they were, and this is, he fits the definition perfectly. Because this guy was ballyhooed. Like, nobody's been ballyhooed.
Oh,
you know, the Patriots, and I think it might have been the Colts, you know, they were in fierce competition for that number one pick. Just so they could pick Ken Sims. You know, it was pretty obvious that both teams were going to pick him if they got the chance. And the Patriots got him, and boy, did he suck. Excuse me.
it still stands out in my mind. There's nobody been, they've never picked anybody worse. It was never a bigger dud for a Patriots draft pick. And God knows that they've had some poor draft picks, but the whole draft process is a crapshoot.
He broke his leg the year they went to the Super Bowl under Berry. And I just remember saying at the time, thank God, now they don't have to play him. You know, they didn't get somebody else in there that can tackle somebody. He was a disaster. Oh, it was awful. There are a couple of Celtics ones that, I mean, if you want to extend it to other sports.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
A.C. Earl. Remember A.C. Earl?
Vaguely.
Bradford Earl.
Yeah, played. Wasn't he from Colorado?
He was from Iowa or someplace like that. And then there was Purvis Ellison, who Danny Ainge called Never in Service Purvis. Because he got injured all the time. Oh, God. Some of those names. Oh.
Well, you in your musings today, Steve, you put together the whole thing on how much of a crapshoot it really is, because you mentioned all the attributes and many of the permutations that personal relationships have on the field and off the field that no matter how much research you do, you really can't predict. And maybe you might want to mention some of the, you know, the stuff that you wrote about in terms of people who wound up, you know, in low draft positions and playing great or vice versa.
Well, I think that there are two things. I didn't exactly say this, but I meant to. There are two things I think that really have to come to the fore here. One of them is, if let's say you're a quarterback, you have to have a good arm. If you're a wide receiver, you have to be fast, and you have to have moves, you know. And I think what happens sometimes is a coach will say, oh, he's a wide receiver. He can do the 50 and But I could cover him. That's how bad the guy is when it comes to getting open. And those are important things. The best Patriot I ever remember, probably even better than Brady, if that's possible. But for me, the best Patriot was Troy Brown. And Troy Brown was an eighth-round draft pick from Marshall. You know, the first Super Bowl they were in, he didn't even dress. That's how far down on the depth chart he was. What kind of a career did Troy Brown have now? Not everybody at once, but what kind of a career did Troy Brown have?
Tim.
Oh, he was outstanding.
He was tremendous.
Well, he played offense, defense, and special teams.
What's that?
He played offense, defense, and special teams.
It was great. And whenever you needed a big play, he got it. He got it.
Third down.
And or when he played defense, he got it there, too. Do you remember in San Diego when somebody fumbled and looked like one of the Chargers was going to go in for a touchdown? And he practically jumped on the guy and pried the ball out of his hand.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that was a game the Patriots won. You know, Teddy Bruschi, another one. I mean, Teddy Bruschi was probably a little bit more. He was a third-round pick. But still, I mean, if there was something that needed to be done, Teddy Bruschi was the guy that you knew was going to do it. And he was, they just had those guys all over the field. You know, what's his name? Vince Wilfork. You know, you need Vince to blow up a play. Vince blew up a play. You know, he was the one that caused that butt fumble in New York because he blew the play up and left whoever it was with no place to go. But Sanchez. But yeah, I you know, and these, Wilfork was a number one. But a lot of these guys that made these great plays for the Patriots were far down on the depth chart when they came here. But they had a little maturity to them. They weren't afraid to fail. I think that's another huge thing that draft choices have to have, that not afraid to fail. You know, you go there, you throw it all out there, and if you don't make it, you don't make it. You go and do something else, but you can't be afraid to fail.
And, you know, Steve, I've asked this question, and I can't get a definitive answer on it. I think I mentioned it. They mentioned last week. Do the Patriots or does the NFL still use the Wonderlic test? Because Belichick administered that every year to the draft choices or the potential draft choices to see how well they scored. And he would take a guy in the sixth round who scored high on the Wonderlic test versus somebody in the second or third round who may have been a great athlete, but according to the Wonderlic test, was dumb as a brick.
I
can coach that guy, I can teach that guy, and he'll learn what I teach him, and he'll win me games.
You have to learn how to take the coaching. You know, I remember one of the things that has become really maddeningly apparent is that Jones does not take the coaching. You know, there are things that he still does that a guy in his third year, a top draft pick, shouldn't do. Yep. You know, he still, you know, he can't get it into his head that this line that he has, this is it. This is his line. It's not going to get any better. It's probably going to get worse, but it's not going to get any better. And it's up to him now to figure out a way to work around it so that he can throw the ball. But, you know, again, you see him out there and he panics. He holds on to the ball too long, and then he throws off his back foot, and boom, you get another interception. It's maddening, and, you know, it's not that I'm sure he's a great guy, you know, and I'm sure he cares like nobody cares. I don't think there's any question but that he's invested in everything like that. But he's just not football intelligent to me. And
you think of Brady, when Brady knew he was going to be facing a heavy pass rush, it was a two or three step drop, and the ball was out of his hands.
And he had that way of sidestepping the rush. So
right, yeah.
And he threw his right.
you know, and he had the ability to recognize where the pocket was moving to and just slide there, slide up one or two steps. That's all he needed. And again, up to that spot, rid of the ball. But he also had receivers that were looking back at him, because I think everybody, he told everybody, or everybody was told, as soon as the ball is snapped, look at Tom. Show Tom you're looking at him, because if you don't, he's going to get hit in the back of the head with the ball more than likely. But if you're looking, he sees you, the ball's on its way.
How many times did you read articles or hear things on talk shows about receivers staying after practice to work one-on-one with Brady? So Brady could teach them how he wants his receivers to be. I don't recall Jones reading anything about Jones doing that. And, you know, Brady was Brady. He was the smartest player I've ever seen. You know, and there's not a close second to that. And the Patriots were very, very fortunate to have him. But, I think if they were smart, they'd have him coaching the quarterbacks. So who better to teach hot quarterback and then the guy who's going to make the Hall of Fame and had to make himself into a good quarterback? So
yeah, I think that's
he brought a level of intelligence with him, and that just allowed him to continue to elevate getting the coaching that he got from Belichick and the staff that he had at that time.
He's one in a million, and that's half the problem. You know, everybody got a little too used to having him around. So I swear to God, O'Brien probably assumed, you know, when he drew up his playbook, that a lot of these plays that he had with Brady were still going to work, even though it was Jones. So, joke was on him, I guess. But, you know, I feel bad for Jones. I think the Patriots couldn't have put him in a worse situation. But at the same time, you know, one of the things about being a professional athlete is you got to tune that stuff out. You know, you got to do what you need to do, and the heck with everything else. And that includes the line, the crummy play calling. You know, if it's the play, you do your best to make it work. And you don't complain about it. You don't complain about, you know, the things that he's been known to complain about. You know, I think that's the maturity aspect of an athlete, is that being able to tune everything out except that which you need to concentrate on.
Well, I think we should remember, too, that didn't Brady play a year or two behind Drew Bledsoe?
No, 1 year.
1 year, okay. All right, yeah. And as I recall, it was a dink and dunk offense for a couple of years before he became Tom Brady.
Yeah, everybody talked about, you know, they were feeding him, you know, little bits here and there, keeping the offense simple for him so he could master it, and then over time it just got very expansive. But yeah, it was dink and dunk. It was a lot of simple plays because they didn't want to overwhelm him. But he went from, you got to remember, he went from being number three in the depth chart his first year to number two on the depth chart his second year.
They cut Michael Bishop, I remember that. I remember being mad about that, too. He obviously made his bones when he engineered that drive in the first Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
That was the first time
anybody
had any idea, you know, the Kogiane that he had, you know, when it came to playing. And I think that was certainly eye-opening to everybody. And then after that, I think when I knew he really had made it as a quarterback was down in Pittsburgh in the 05 AFC Championship game against Pittsburgh, when he just threw the ball all over the field. And everything was on the money and everything was complete. And you just knew that they had somebody really, really special.
Well, I think that puts the exclamation point on the worst drafts, because How many teams overlook Tom Brady? So, you know, you know what, 32 teams did it five times?
Yeah. So that's pretty good. And, you know, and he was mad. That really motivated him to go in there, and he just, you know. But, hey, he used whatever he had to use to make himself better. And he was, you know, he just, he was special. And, you know, as much as you like to think, I think Belichick thought that he could get anybody and coach him up to be like Brady. And what he must have found out by now is, nuh-uh.
Yeah, right. That's a good point.
You're not going to coach anybody up to be Brady.
Good point.
There has to have been
What's that, Tim?
Bring back the Wonderlic test.
Okay. With that, we'll say, Steve, not sure about next week because I got some stuff going on, but I hope we can do it again. And if not, we'll do it again soon.
Okay.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks, guys.
Take care. Be well.
Good, buddy.
All right, that's Steve Krause, some sports and news journalist, primarily with the item in Lynn. And the topic, well, subtopic, the draft position. But when I read his article today, Tim, Ken Sims was one of the very first that he mentioned, was right up at the top, you know, as a poor number one draft pick overall. So you were right on the money with that. And I remember that because I thought he was going to be great.
Oh, you watch him play in Texas. He destroyed everybody.
Yep.
He destroyed everybody.
But I do remember vaguely why he was called Game Day, because he said, "Don't be ready. Don't worry. I'll be ready on game day." He didn't practice hard, from what I remember.
Yep.
All right. Okay. So, we'll go ahead, Tim. I'm sorry.
Didn't play out on game day.
Well, that was the problem. Yeah, no question. All right. Let's see if we can get Mike on the phone here. We'll talk with Mike Grenier, talk a little more draft, and then we'll talk some Celtics, of course. This is MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore with Tim Kearns. Our producer and engineer is Bill Poposky. We shall return.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at moynihanlumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Back for that last Alabama drive.
Yeah.
And I was glued to my seat. I'm thinking, now there's no way. They don't have enough time. They haven't played well enough to do this, though. It's Alabama, so you know there's always time and there's always a chance. And I watched it unfold, and I went, oh, my God, they could do this. And then they take the pedal, and they're like, nah, this is over now. And he throws a 31, yeah.
Fourth and 31. Fourth and goal.
Right.
Oh, my God.
And Tim, I'll pick that up from here, because I was watching the final moment, you know, switching around different games. I was watching the final minute of that game, and I thought Auburn made a huge mistake, guys, in terms of they had a third down play from that same area, okay? And I saw that Auburn rushed like two guys, or something like that, at the quarterback. So the quarterback had literally 5 or 6 minutes to throw the ball if he wanted to. And that one was incomplete. Okay, but I remember I said to my wife, I mean, this is not good strategy by Auburn, because the quarterback has all day to throw. So instead of putting any kind of pressure on him, Auburn came at him on fourth down with no pressure. And you saw him dancing around back there and looking for someone to get open. And sure enough, I give him credit for firing a laser into the end zone. But to me, Auburn's strategy was flawed in that they didn't put any pressure on the quarterback. And it gave him time to a lot of time to throw, and someone eventually broke open for the winning score.
What a hell of an effort to make that catch! He went up and over the defender who was right in front of him,
right,
and brought it in, and that ball just had enough height and distance on it to get past that defender. I mean, it all had to work. It all had to come together, you know. And he's sitting there watching, going, "No, I don't." You know, Saban must have been out of his mind. Like, did we really just do that?
Yeah. It was an amazing win for Alabama, but I just think Auburn played it wrong on defense. You know, give Alabama credit, but Auburn was on the verge of a massive upset there.
Yeah.
And I thought they just let it get away.
All right, let's talk other mistakes. Let's talk the draft picks. That's the topic. And Steve Krause came up with, he had at the top of his list, too, Ken Sims, Tim does, too. I have a different one. Mine's from basketball. But what do you have?
Well, I mean, I wasn't I went with the Celtics and, you know, basketball. I remember Ken Sims very well. And they've had some really bad ones over the years, obviously, in recent years with, the receivers and all that stuff. But I kind of went towards the basketball route, okay?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I kind of picked – there's so many draft picks that go sour in basketball, even though those guys are great in college sometimes. I thought it'd be an exercise to do Celtics draft picks that didn't work out.
That works.
Well, so I'm going to be testing your memory here, guys. The first one I can go back to, going way back in the time machine, was Clarence Glover. You ever hear of him?
Oh, yeah. Was he a Kentucky kid?
Correct. Western Kentucky. Okay.
Yep.
1971. And I think the reason I picked him is, ironically, I wasn't still in college at the time, but I was covering the Celtics or something. And I got to know him very well. And he was definitely one of the nicest people I've ever met in my life in sports. He was a real personality. He was articulate. He loved being with the Celtics. However, he was a first round pick in 1971. Okay, he played all of 25 games.
Wow.
Celtics. And Rick, you'll love this because when he was drafted, Red Auerbach said, "He's going to be a quicker, faster version of Satch Sanders."
Mm.
Okay, and it didn't quite work out. He kind of knocked around in basketball for a couple of years, but he knew his true calling wasn't there after a year or two, and he ended up going back and being like a middle school principal of the school that he went to in Kentucky as a kid, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So at least he became a productive member of society. Nothing wrong with what happened. He just wasn't good enough to play for the Celtics or in the NBA back in 1971. And, of course, Tim and Rick, we all know that drafting back then, we talk about it, we use that term inexact science, but back then it was even more difficult to draft because it's not like the Mel Kiper days nowadays where players are scouted and you get film on them and all that stuff. I mean, Red Auerbach had to rely on word of mouth from his many coaching friends in the college ranks, or people who would go to college games, and they would call him up and say, "Red, there's a kid out in Kentucky, or there's a kid down in Florida who's good, we think you can draft him," and all that. There wasn't much scouting that went on. Red Auerbach didn't have time to scout, and nor did he have 8 or 9 assistant coaches, which every coach in the NBA has now. So, therefore, he picked... I mean, let's remember that Dave Cowens came to the Celtics only because his coach at Florida State recommended him. And Red Auerbach ended up looking like a genius, and, you know, Dave Cowens, as we all know, became a Hall of Fame phenomenal player. But that was just based on the recommendation of his college coach.
Well, I've mentioned this one before, and I think I thought it was a bad move at the time. But you remember when Red Auerbach drafted Larry Bird as a junior, and the kids couldn't come out at that point. They had to, their senior class had to be graduating.
Right.
And I thought, wait a minute, he's wasting a draft pick this year on a junior in college. What's he doing?
Right. And only that, right, Rick? That was that in-between period where the Celtics were really bad after winning in 1974 and 1976. They ended up with Sidney Wicks and Curtis Rowe, trades and all that.
Yep.
And they were a really bad team. And so for them to have to wait for a year for Larry Bird, everyone wondered if, you know, Red Auerbach was losing it a little
bit.
But he knew exactly what he was doing because they went from 29 wins to 60 wins the year that Bird came aboard. So So, yeah, and by the same token, Rick, you know, talking about Auerbach relying on cronies or friends, and this was ended up being a tragic case, Lenny Bias.
Well, that let me interrupt. That was my pick to be the worst draft of all time.
Yeah, okay. I won't.
No, go ahead.
Obviously, because I didn't hear you, but we all know what happened, and that was too bad. You know, I mean, that was really too bad.
No, I hadn't said anything yet, so please elaborate.
Oh, I mean, he relied on Lefty Drysdale's word, and I think there were rumors definitely swirling around the Maryland campus that Bias was on cocaine or a drug user, a drug abuser. And Lefty Drysdale, I remember reading several stories that Lefty Drysdale had assured Auerbach that the kid was over his, had conquered his problems, and obviously he did not. So, go ahead, Rick, you can add to that. So I'd love to know what your, you know.
Well, I just remember that when he was drafted, there was a lot of excitement. He was one of the top five players in the country, as I recall.
Oh, yeah.
He was way up there, and the Celtics needed him. As you say, we were in the Sidney Wicks era.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was like, I guess we were beyond that, but I'm just thinking, you know, it's this is going to be great. And yeah. So draft day was exciting. You go to bed, you wake up the next morning, and you read he's dead. I mean, how bad can that get?
Right. That was horrible. And because from everything we heard, and I remember seeing him on TV a few times, he was so gifted, a player back in the 80s. He was a very gifted player, tremendous physical talent. And he was seen as a guy who would succeed Larry Bird
right.
as the face of the franchise. That's how much talent he had. Right, Tim?
Yeah, he worked several years at Red Auerbach's basketball camp down in D.C. That's where Red
sure.
knew him.
Yep.
And I always found it amazing that Red didn't have a better handle on his background, because I had just gone to D.C. to teach that summer, and of course that's all anybody was talking about. And you know, the word, and I had some colleagues at the school I was in who taught at Northwestern when he was a student there.
Uh-huh.
And you know, they had stories, and you're like, really? Hmm. You know, how did so much of this kid's background get by Red? Was he so enamored with his potential? Because even Larry Bird came out and said, I'll play another 10 years with him on the team.
Sure.
Because all the pressure, all the weight off of Larry's shoulders, and Larry could sit back and become a bench warmer and sub for him.
Exactly, Tim. And I still remember the image, and I think I was at the Garden a day or two out, they brought in Bias for the media the day after they drafted him, I believe. And I remember him sitting courtside with Larry Bird, and Bird had his arm around him, probably explaining to him what he would be facing in the NBA. And it was like 2 days later that he died. You know, so it was a really eerie image that I have of Lenny Bias sitting there with Larry Bird, thinking, Bird currently was, at the time, still a highly productive player, but the future was Lenny Bias, and he was sitting there right next to Larry Bird. And 2 days later, he was dead. Total tragedy, but obviously a draft mistake, like you said, Rick, and it haunted the Celtics for a long time.
Yeah, and I didn't mean to make small of that or light of that. I mean, it was just it's just a horrible tragedy all the way around. I mean, you know, for the Bias family, for everything, and it's just how could things go wrong, so wrong? And it's the same thing we talked last week about Reggie Lewis. How could things just go so wrong? Such a young man, good guy, gifted. You know, oh geez, it's just you know, I've all three of us have been around for a while. And we're blessed to be able to do that and see that. And you just imagine, you know, if these kids had just, I don't know, had better luck or whatever.
Right, exactly. And it would, you know, sometimes you still see kids at arenas wearing Lenny Bias jerseys. I've seen them at the Garden. And I think, I don't know if it's, maybe young people saw him on YouTube or something like that and saw his exploits in college and said, wow, this what a great talent he was. And he was. It would have been stupendously intriguing and interesting to see if he could have extended the Celtics 1980s dynasty with a couple more championships, because they still had some really good players on that team when he would have been incorporated into that rotation. Yep. So it would have been really, really great to see that. But obviously, it's all speculation now because he passed away way too young, you know. So let's go with my next guy, Fab Mello. Fab Mello, Syracuse, 2012 he graduated.
Wow.
Or he got out of school. First-round draft pick, number 21 in the draft. And he was like a big rebounder, tough kid at Syracuse playing for Jim Boeheim, but he was a problematic kid too, sort of like Lenny Bias. Matter of fact, Rick, he came from Brazil, and he ended up not making his way through the NBA. He ended up back in Brazil, and he died at age 26.
Oh, my goodness.
Under mysterious circumstances. Oh. Now, his Celtics career, and I mentioned him too, because I think our local kid, Michael Carter Williams, who played at Syracuse with him, I believe Michael Carter Williams was on that great, great team that went to the Final Four, and then Michael Carter Williams ended up being the Rookie of the Year in 2013 out of Hamilton, Massachusetts. Fab Mello was on that same Syracuse team. He ended up playing a total of 36 minutes with the Boston Celtics. 36
oh, my goodness.
Minutes in one bad season. And then, again, you lose track of those guys because he played with the Maine Red Claws, you know, their minor league team for a while, and he never really made it back to the NBA. So, Tim, do you remember him, Fab Mello?
I remember the name. I can't remember. Again, the career was so brief and so meaningless, you can't even remember
Right. Putting
half of the picture to the guy.
Yep, and that's the very definition of a bad draft pick, right?
Yeah.
A guy that you say, okay, you momentarily catch his glamour on draft night, and he puts on the hat, and he's hugged by the commissioner, and then all of a sudden comes summer league and the regular season, it gradually disappears, and a team eventually has to admit they made a mistake. You know, so that was a mistake. I think the next one is a Danny Ainge mistake, I believe. James Young, out of Kentucky, a number one pick around the 17th or 18th player. Fairly recent, I mean, we're talking 9 years ago, 2014. Got injured. He went to training camp. He wasn't good enough. He bounced between the Varsity, the Celtics, and the Maine Red Claws. And in like three seasons, basically, on and off with the Celtics, because he spent a lot of time in the minor leagues, he played a total of 95 games. 95 games in three seasons with the Celtics. And he shot 36% from the field, 27% on threes. And once they cut him, no one really showed much interest in him, you know? So that was another bad one. And he was expected to be, you know, he came out of Kentucky, the high-profile Kentucky program, but he really didn't. You know, as another guy who didn't pan out, you know?
You know, Mike, there's the thing that I think happens with a lot of teams. They draft the program and not a player.
Right. That's a great point. That's a great point, Tim. They draft the program. And like, for example, a lot of players came out of Rick Pitino's program that didn't pan out. And unfortunately for the Celtics, Rick Pitino became the Celtics coach, and he took players that had been in his program that didn't work out, like Ron Mersa, who was the very inauspicious debut. Well, he had a couple of games early in his career, but after a couple of months, everyone could see that he wasn't going to be the guy, a guy who could really contribute much to the Celtics. So Pitino had some really bad, influential draft picks during his era, his dark era with the Celtics, in which, Rick, I dote on this, just like you dote on certain things, but the worst thing Pitino ever did was he took the stenciling of Red Auerbach's name off the president of the Celtics' office and made himself the president of the Celtics.
Yeah, I remember that, yep.
That, to me, is one of the most heinous basketball crimes I've ever seen, you know what I mean? So,
prayed a little harder for Parrish, McHale, and Bird to come walking through that door again.
Oh, my God, that was one of the famous quotes of all time, right? Oh, my God, he's trying to cover up his own sins, you know? I have another beauty right here who played, actually, this guy, Michael Smith. You remember him? He played at Brigham Young, and I think he was up there, at least at the college level. He scored about as many. I think he might have broken Danny Ainge's Brigham Young scoring record, okay?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and this we're talking 1989, and so Ainge had been with the Celtics for a while already and all that good stuff. And everyone had high hopes for this kid, Michael Smith, but he played a couple of years. He played 112 games in a couple of years, and he had 156 rebounds in 112 games. So, Tim, let's do the math. What's that, like 1.5 rebounds per game?
Maybe almost 1.5, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and I think I read something that he was Muggsy Bogues. We know how he was like 5'7". He had more block shots than Michael Smith in his career, you know? And Bogues, of course, was a gifted athletically, but still we're talking a 5'7 guy, you know what I mean? So that was, you know, a horrible pick, and everyone kind of knew early on that wasn't going to work out. So that's another bad one. I think maybe the crowning low achievement, though, in terms of bad draft picks for the Celtics came in 2001. Okay, they picked two guys in the first round that not only did they not pan out, but they missed out on a great player in the process. Kedrick Brown was picked 11th, and he shot. He played 101 games overall in a Celtics jersey, and he shot 13.1% on threes and 34% overall. And then later in that first round, they took a kid from North Carolina, Joseph Forte, who they thought was going to be their point guard of the future. And on draft night, or even a couple days before the draft, they had called Tony Parker and said, we're going to send you a Celtics cap. We're going to take you on draft night. They sent him a cap, and Tony Parker, who came from France, thought he was going to be a Celtic. Well, at the last minute, they decided not to take Tony Parker, and they took Joseph Forte instead and Kedrick Brown. And all Tony Parker did, of course, was play for Greg Popovich, and he won like 4 NBA titles as the point guard on those great San Antonio teams that had Tim Duncan and David Robinson and that whole crew. So, yeah, there have been some really horrendous draft picks. But, of course, we could say that about every NBA team. Every NBA team whiffs on a draft because, like we've said, you never know what the difference is going to be between college athleticism and college greatness as opposed to NBA athleticism, IQ, basketball IQ in an NBA game, and, you know, being sturdy enough to play 82 games as opposed to a 30 games college season. All those things factor in. So yeah, there have been some other ones too. Jared Sullinger, I remember him coming out of Ohio State. I thought he was going to be great because he was a great inside post player, Tim. Remember that? Just about 6'7", during the Paul Pierce era, I believe. And he was a tremendous player at Ohio State. He came to the Celtics, and initially he made an impact, but then he put on about 40 or 50 pounds, and he ate himself out of the league, you know?
Well, it's strange because you would think the discipline and the oversight would be a bit sterner once you got to the big leagues than in college. But some of these guys just lose that discipline for some reason and think they don't have to pay attention.
Right.
And it ends up costing them.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, it's too bad when that happens. But nowadays, of course, you know, every player practically has a strength coach and a nutrition coach and all that. But that, you know, you can make a case that Zion Williamson didn't pay attention for a while. He's in shape right now, and he's playing well, but he's still missed several games already. And, you know, for some of these guys, it doesn't matter how many coaches or how many people, good people around them are telling them about good habits to develop, but for some reason, the message doesn't penetrate with some players, you know? So, but those are some of the ones I thought of and looked up were the guys that I remembered very well that the Celtics fanned on. But then again, you know, they did hit the mark with somebody named Jason Tatum, and they did hit the mark with somebody named Jaylen Brown. And so they've done pretty well in recent years, that's for sure, under Brad Stevens. And and of course, Danny Ainge made some great picks as well. So there's been some good. There's been a lot of bad as well.
I remember watching Jaylen Brown, Tatum, on draft night when Jason Tatum was picked, And what impressed me was he a sophomore or a junior out of...
He was a freshman.
Yeah, he just played the 1 year.
Out of North Carolina, was it?
Duke.
Yeah, anyway, but I was impressed with his presence and his intelligence.
Yeah.
And the first thing he talked about, as I recall, or the main thing he talked about and the little after thing that they do, was his mom and how his mom helped single moms and stuff like that. And I thought, damn, this, I like hearing that. And I had no idea he was going to be who he is, you know?
Right, right. And, of course, you know, since 2017, you know, it's been Jaylen Brown and Tatum, both of them being the cornerstones of the franchise. So, obviously, those are great draft picks. We're talking 6 years later now, and obviously they've been a contender for the NBA title the last two seasons in particular, and obviously right now have the best record in the league by a slim margin, but we've only played 16, 17 games. So those were great draft picks. But yeah, when you sit back and look at it and you think about people like Lenny Bias and Reggie Lewis and people like that, there's certainly been some tragedies along the way, and there's been basketball tragedies in the sense that guys never develop. So it's too bad when that happens, but it's happened to every team, every single team in the league. Nobody's perfect. Look at you think of the San Antonio Spurs this season, right, Tim? And Wembanyama is the consensus player to be taken, would have been taken by any team in the league as number one. He's 7'5", came from France. He's only 20 years old, or 19 years old. I think he doesn't turn 20 till January. And even though he has shown some greatness in his early career here, the Spurs are like 3-13 or 3-14. They have one of the worst records in the league.
Yeah, it's hard to figure out because, you know, is Popovich, you know, having a Belichick moment or vice versa, where your ability to communicate the message isn't quite what it used to be? Are the players tuning you out? Are they not the kind of players you've had in the past who are able to grasp what it is you want to do? You know, are there too many egos in the room that you can't all fit through the doorway at one time? You know, there's a lot of people questioning, you know, Popovich right now, and in terms of, you know, how much of their record is his fault.
Right, exactly. You know, I've watched him a couple of times. I really like the kid. Rick, we've talked about it. I think you and I texted one night after he had a bad game with Manaya. But I've seen some games where he's been dominant, too. I think, Tim, part of the problem with the Spurs right now is there isn't enough talent surrounding the big guy, the big young kid, who still kind of plays with deer in the headlights sometimes. But he's, you can tell he's going to be great. But I don't think there's enough really solid talent, top-of-the-line talent, for them to be a contender for a while. So they might have to struggle, and they might have to struggle and pick up some guys in the draft or in trades or something to complement this young kid who does have a lot of promise, you know?
Yeah, he has a lot of promise, but think back to when Kareem Abdul-Jabbar first came into the league. He had 4 years at UCLA under the coaching of John Wooden.
Yep.
He was a mature young man coming into the league. He gets drafted by Milwaukee, and they go on a run right away. But they also had some great ball players on that team.
Yes.
You know, you still had Oscar playing at the end of his career, but Oscar at the end of his career is better than 9% of the young guys playing in their first 2 years right now.
No question.
You know, you had Bobby Dandridge playing as one of your forwards.
Oh, yeah.
And so there was some balance on that team that, you know, Lou Alcindor didn't have to bear the whole weight. He could just really be himself and play to his ability, which was tremendous, and with the maturity level to handle some of the things that came at him. I don't think this kid is, he's not old enough, he's not physically mature enough, he's not mentally mature enough, and like I said, he doesn't have the talent that some of the bigger names of guys that have come into the league who played 4 years of college have brought with them.
Right. Right. It's a great point. Those guys that played 4 years back then in those that era, teams knew them much better, NBA teams, because they could see that they had 4 years of training in college ranks, and they kind of knew what they were getting in the draft a lot of times because some of these guys were on national TV a lot, and just having that physical and mental maturity of 4 years in college, you kind of had more sure bets in the draft at different times, you know? So,
yep.
So yeah, you make a great point there, Tip. Rick, do you want a quick Power Five? Because a couple of these teams may never make the Power Five again.
Of course. Go ahead, Mike.
All right. I'm going to go. I'll tell you what. Here's a team that's been surprising in some sense. Oklahoma City Thunder, right? I got them at the number five spot. They've won eight of their last 10. They're 11-5 overall. They're second in the Western Conference. Perhaps the best unknown player in the league, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, right, Tim? He can score 35 or 40 in any given night, all right? So then I got to go with the Milwaukee Bucks in the number four spot because they're only like a game behind the Celtics, and they're 7-3 in their last 10. They've been coming on, all right? How about this team, the Orlando Magic,
yes,
who beat the Celtics the day after Thanksgiving? I don't think the Celtics took – I know Porzingis got hurt in the second half. The Celtics, I don't know if they didn't take him seriously or what, but at one point in the fourth quarter, the Celtics were down 17 or 18 or whatever. So I've got them in there, right? And then obviously, you know, the Minnesota Timberwolves hang 12-4. The Celtics are 13-4, so the Timberwolves – have played well all year, and they're in my number two spot. And very quickly, Rick, I've got the Celtics at number one, not just because they're 13-4 and have the best record, but they've also, among the contending teams, the teams that we would consider, they've played the fewest home games, Rick.
Oh, okay.
They've played only 7 home games out of 17 games.
Well,
so they're going to, obviously, that's going to turn around. They're going to end up with a bunch of home games, but I think what they've done with road having so many road games so far has been very impressive.
Well, it's nice to get some other guys in there, too, and that's going to change as we go along. I have one quick question before we go, Mike, and that is your evaluation of the subs playing the other night when they won the game. When Drew Holiday was out,
yeah.
Porzingis was out, and this kid came in. I don't think he was a kid. He only got 6 points, but he played almost the whole game. What's your evaluation of that game?
Well, yeah, I thought the bench showed some great – I mean – the question mark all year will be the bench and how effective they are, because now Porzingis is going to be out for a couple of weeks. But yes, to me, Sam Hauser has regained his three-point touch. He's really shooting it with great confidence. I'd have to check his stats the last 5 or 6 games, but it's been magnificent. Peyton Pritchard has, after a really very bad start, has regained his scoring touch, and he's helped. And to me, the biggest surprise off the bench has been Luke Kornet. He had like one night where he was 5 for 6 and he had 12 points and 6 or 7 rebounds. And he kind of knows his limitations. He knows he's not athletic and he's not going to shoot 3-pointers. So he doesn't try to do anything out of his comfort range. And so therefore, he'll take that dunk off a lob pass and he'll play the good defense interior and to the best of his ability. He's never out of position. So to me, he's been a nice surprise, I think, off the bench.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's other guys who certainly have not shown so much lately. O'Shea Brissett, who's shooting like 10% or something from the floor. He's had limited opportunities. He hasn't shown much. This kid Banton, who played a couple nights ago, hasn't shown much. I think those guys need to develop to contribute something, but so far they haven't.
All right, Tim, final thoughts?
Yeah, you know, you mentioned Luke Kornet, and he's doing, you know, not doing too much. Kind of reminds me of what my high school gym coach, Jim Jardy, told me. Get the ball and give it to somebody who can shoot.
That's always great advice.
So I did.
Always great advice. You know, it may go in your ear and want to go out the other ear, but I guess it's sound advice a lot of times.
I'll tell you, it works for me.
Yep.
All right, Mike, thank you for the history lesson tonight. Fantastic stuff. You and Tim are so knowledgeable with this stuff, and I love it. I learned a lot.
Steve Krause was great, too. Steve Krause was great with all that football stuff.
Oh, he's amazing. You guys, you know, as sports writers, I'm just in awe of him. So I'm so happy we have you guys that we can talk with on Monday nights. It's great. I'm not sure about next Monday night because there's some stuff going on. Obviously, this time of year it gets a little silly. But I'll let you know later in the week. In the meantime, you and your bride have a lovely week.
You too. You guys too. And it's great talking to you. Take care.
Hey, Mike.
We'll do this again when we do it again.
Oh yeah.
Hey, Mike.
Yes.
Rick heard there's snow up north.
Yeah. Tim, don't give that away. Jeez.
By the way. way, guys, I still don't understand the in-season tournament. I don't know what's going on, and all I know is that the players are happy to get $500,000 if they win it.
They're talking about the Celtics. If they lose again, they're out of it. It's like, what?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, God.
And,
all right.
And most of all, they all hate the paint schemes that are going down there.
It's hideous. It's hideous.
It's a distraction.
Yeah, it's an issue.
All right, Mike, be well. We'll talk to you later.
Yeah, thanks an awful lot, guys.
No, thank you, Mike. Mike Grenier, sports journalist, very knowledgeable about, well, not just basketball, but so much stuff. And that was a history lesson tonight, Tim.
It's a history lesson every week.
It is. It is. That's true.
As well as a walk down memory lane.
Yeah, but he's got all these, he does his research like he's doing an article for Sports Illustrated. It's just tremendous. I love it. God, it's super. Coach, you be well, stay on the mend, and be careful.
Yeah, you also, and, if we talk next week, we'll talk, but if we don't, be careful.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thanks, Tim. Talk to you later.
All right,
bye-bye. That is Tim Kearns, who is our sports analyst and our ambassador of goodwill. Don't forget all the information we have up on the website. And tomorrow, even more coming with the Super Bowls. You've got the Salem News sports writers that will be dropping around 8 a.m. Domin Nicastro talking at Super Subs with all the Beverly captains. He's posting all kinds of great videos up there. Check it all out, plus the news, every single day here on MSO News Sports. So on behalf of Bill Newell and Tim Kearns and Bill Proposky, I'm Rick Moore wishing you a very pleasant good evening. Be well, stay safe, and do the right thing.